Collectors, let's talk about the real villain in your collection. It's not Dr. Doom, it's the dreaded box stack. You know the one, piles of sagging boxes, and the issue you need is always in the bottom box. When you lift, you pray your spine survives. If your comic boxes are stacked like a game of Jenga, it's time for Drawer Boxes, the easy access storage solution from CollectionDrawer.com. Drawer Boxes are stackable up to 6 high, but you don't have to unstack anything to get inside. Just slide out the drawer and you're opening a treasure chest of comic glory. And just like any file cabinet drawer, they'll hang open on the own while you peruse your collection, thanks to their patented box locks box anchors that secure each unit so that they won't tip. Worried about a drawer slipping out and dumping that near mint run of Ultimate Spider-Man on the floor? Not a chance, but their patented locking tabs that keep drawers securely locked into their shell until you're ready to remove them. Let's talk box sort upright dividers. They keep your comics standing tall, sorted by title, issue, era, whatever you like, and make it easy to file. No more leaning stacks causing spine cracks. So ditch the lifting, ditch the chaos. Drawer boxes turn your collection into a library, not a workout. Visit CollectionDrawer.com and start enjoying your collection today. Doesn't your first Deadpool appearance deserve better than being buried in a cardboard coffin? What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And on The Stack, we talk about a bunch of books that have come out this week. Yeah. We have a little bit of a shorter stack, but that's all right. Everybody loves a short stack when they go into the
summer.
Diner.
You know, it's the summertime. Just relax. You know what I mean? A little light.
Chillax.
You know what I mean? Just a light stack of pancakes.
Yes. When it's hot out, I'm like, no, not my regular large stack of pancakes.
Just a
bunch of silver dollars or something.
I love silver dollar pancakes, dude.
Yeah, you got to have your pancakes, but not as many pancakes. Mm-hmm. Anyway, not going to link to this anymore. Let's talk about Superman, the Kryptonite Spectrum, number one from DC Comics, written by W. Maxwell Prince, art by Martine Morazzo, as well as Chris O'Halloran, and good old Neon was the entire team from the Image Comics Ice Cream Man, one of our absolute favorite books on this show. Yes. Coming over to DC and doing a Black Label series about what if Superman discovered a bunch of new types of kryptonite from different colors in the spectrum. He decides over the course of the book to test them under Batman's watchful eye to see what they do, so he'll know in case they fall into the wrong hands. Pete, I was certainly hyped for this, knowing the Ice Cream Man team is so good. How did you feel about the outcome?
Well, first off, I just think this is such a great idea. You know what I mean? Because Superman is such an iconic character, and to have it kind of in the creepy hands, if you will, you know what I mean? Like, Ice Cream Man is known for being, like, scary, creepy. What's going on? What's going on? So I feel like, what a cool idea to be like, what if they got to have Superman for a little while and what would they do? And this is such an interesting, cool, well-executed idea of like, let's explore other kinds of kryptonite and have it be in the mischievous hands of the ice cream people. So, yeah, I am all on board on this. This was so cool. The art just adds such a level of like, oh, shit, what's going to happen? The tension on this is just, I'm just so happy that this got made because it means that somebody's paying attention and having some fun. Because if, like, I was in control of things, this would be something that I would want to see. Like, let's take these guys over here who do such a specific thing and see what they can do over here. And, oh, man, so cool.
I totally agree with you. I love what DC has been doing in terms of their swings on things, taking a chance here. You know, Ice Cream Man does really well sales-wise, so it's not a huge, like, out-of-left-field chance. But you could see them being like, yeah, let's get W. Maxwell Prince to write Superman, period. But they were like, no, we're going to let you do Superman the way that you would do Superman. So what we get here, spoiler, and I'll give a blanket spoiler warning for everything here, is we get Superman getting hit with kryptonite that knocks his time out of whack. So he starts experiencing time in
purple
the wrong order.
Kryptonite fucks with time.
Yes. And so the way that they execute this is the pages are in the wrong order. The panels are in the wrong order. And it's playing with the comic book form, which is exactly what they do on Ice Cream Man. Yeah, well, so telling a good
much more positive story than they usually do. So it still fits in the Superman ethos. It isn't Superman melting or bugs crawling out of his face, at least yet.
Yeah, or anything like that's that.
So
thing,
great, great stuff. One other thing that I wanted to shout out here. I'm glad they're doing this book and very happy about it. But there's a little sequence that they have with Batman and Gotham that is so good. It made me feel like that is obviously the more natural fit. So throwing them into Superman and having it kind of work against it, I get the impulse there. But there's a panel that W. Maxwell Prince draws of Batman kicking, where he's just like straight out to the side kicking a criminal. That's really funny and fun. And it made me, I stopped at that page and I'm like, oh, let them do Batman next. Let them do a Batman story after this. But
I like the idea of this because he is the kind of like, you know, the icon, and, you know, seems like, oh, you can't really touch, you know, Batman, you can fuck around with a little bit, but I mean, Superman, I like the fact that they gave them Superman because it makes it that much. I hear what you're saying. I definitely agree. I think that our Batman book would be amazing, but I also like that this is where we're going. And, you know, because it just is like, oh, what are they going to do? Like, what do these mean? And how are they going to? Because it's visually such a great read every time you open an Ice Cream Man book, and bringing that kind of like what's going to happen to Superman is something you don't normally get. So it's a fun kind of feeling with something that, you know, is usually just kind of a staple. So I'm excited.
Giant Size X-Men, number 2 from Marvel, written by Colin Kelly and Jackson Lansing and Jen McKay, art by Adam Kubert and Kafu. This is bringing to a close the mini-event that has seen Miss Marvel travel throughout time, battling not Legion, but the powers of Legion that have been separated from the man itself. Here, it all comes down to a fight between Miss Marvel and Legion. I know we've been a little back and forth on this series of one-shots, but how do you feel about how it wrapped up, Pete?
Well, first off, it's just some amazing pages and panels in this comic. Really felt to me like a giant size issue. Like they were doing some real artistic shit in here, which was great. Sometimes they put giant size, and I'm like, this is a regular X-Men book. But I really felt like this was big enough and epic enough here. So I felt like, great, this is fun. You know, and also interesting kind of twist here where, you know, Legion doesn't get murdered or killed or, you know, maybe some of the things that he deserves, but gets a second chance here. And then that really kind of turns things around. So cool, fun twist. And
I disagree with you. I think
you didn't like the Legion hug, the Legion on Legion hug.
Very good page, signed by Adam Kubert, so clearly he can sell it later on. Looks good. Good poster material. This did not feel like anything beyond a regular X-Men story to me. It didn't really feel giant size. I've been... The way that this tied up, where they kind of like yada, yada, yada of the... Yes,
hello. Can I just say one more positive thing before you...
Oh, my God, please.
So when they did the claws and the cyclops, I mean, that was cool. Come on, right? Give me that.
It was all right.
You fucker, dude.
It was fine. It was totally fine. It brought her back to the modern era, but didn't really feel like it tied. There was a moment when I thought she had put together a time-lost team of X-Men from all of her adventures thus far, and that's not what happened. It was just all the modern X-Men from the different teams and books, which is fine. And I like the focus on Miss Marvel figuring out what her mutant identity is,
how that
ties
cool.
to her own identity. Good emotional thread through all of these one-shots. That was nicely done. But I don't know, it just kind of came down to a requisite big old punchy punch fight, and it just didn't grab me. That's all.
What about the like different panels we had to kind of like turn, and you didn't think any of that was cool?
Here's the thing. I liked it when I had to turn in the last book we talked about, but I didn't like it here.
Weird.
Yeah, it is weird.
Huh.
Art is subjective.
I hear you. Yeah, but
this
maybe
is something
you're having
just
a...
thought of.
Maybe you're having a bad day, and you're bringing that to the comic. And
I have a bad day. No, I'm having a great day because I get to talk about comics. Let's keep it going with Transformers, number 23 from Skybound and Image Comics, written by Daniel Warren Johnson, art by Jorge Corona. Pete, this is at the penultimate issue of Daniel Warren Johnson's run. He is exiting after this. It is all coming down to this. And you're not going to believe this. The Autobots and the Decepticons I just want to pause here for a little bit of emphasis. They're on opposite sides, and they're fighting, and it might come down to Optimus Prime versus Megatron, which is crazy.
Dude, first off, fuck you for your tone, all right? We're just talking about X-Men, and it comes down to Magneto and Professor X, and, you know, you can say that anywhere, but the fact that you're, like, hoity-toity about Transformers, you're like, I'm a nerd. I love a lot of nerdy things, but Transformers missed me, so I'm going to look down upon it. Fuck you, man. Fuck you. This is fucking awesome. All right, this cover is fucking great. DWJ is killing this. And if you've seen Transformers, the animated movie, which you fucking should have because it's glorious, this is just a evolution of that, a taking it and bringing it to a higher ground, just a amplification of how badass that was in comic book form. And I got chills reading this book. When you get the final showdown that we've seen a lot of times, but still, the fact that he's just, you know, Optimus Prime says, one will rise or one shall fall. That's my fucking battle cry, dude. I jumped up out of my seat and I was like, ah! This is just so great. So much fun. Nostalgia bath, whatever you want to call it. This is just glorious. It's fucking glorious.
I know what you want to call it, which is nostalgia bath, which you just did.
You've this got the touch. Issue
had the you things the that I this issue has had an has an equal measure what I liked about this run and what I don't like about this run. I'll start with what I don't like is what I intimated earlier is the battle scenes are just a lot of yeah, ooh, pew pew, ah, huh. What he's here. Get and it's just this nonstop wash of like, I don't know what the stakes are. I don't know who is fighting who exactly. I don't know what we're fighting for or why we're fighting in Chicago other than the Autobots and Decepticons always fight. I don't get any of that. None of that is working for me because I think it is just too piecemeal. It would work in animation, but it is not working for me on the still page. The thing that is working for me is there is a scene where Optimus, who has been shut down, is, I assume, in the matrix of leadership, and he encounters Spike's father, who previously sacrificed himself to bring his Energon. The book slows down there, gets into character, talks about things, talks about being a father, and that to me, I was like, this is what I expect from Daniel Warren Johnson, is a true beating heart, in this case, quite literally, of a book, and I have not been getting since the first arc of Transformers. So I don't know if Robert Kirkman's going to bring that going forward. Maybe we'll get more of that in the next and final issue of DWJ's run, but that is what I've been missing, and I did get here, but I wish there was more of that.
Well, you just don't like Transformers because it's all there, bro.
That's not what I said. All there. That is not what I said.
It's the hearts on the page.
Mm-hmm. All right. Maybe it's in the red ink, I guess. Predator Kills the Marvel Universe, number one from Marvel, written by Benjamin Percy, art by Marcelo Ferreira and Daniel Picciotto. This is following up on the one-on-ones that Benjamin Percy has been writing with Predator versus Wolverine, Black Panther, and Spider-Man. And this takes place in that same alternate universe. And what that means is anybody can actually die in here, and they do. And they set the stakes pretty clearly by having the Predators murder the Guardians of the Galaxy in the opening scene, which I was like, all right, bold move. Let's go. Let's see who dies next. Let's see what happens. If I like the Wolverine series, I felt the Black Panther series was a little convoluted. As we talked about, there was some fun stuff in the Spider-Man series, but it was a little silly overall. But this one really got me with the first issue. This feels like they've actually all been building up to with real stakes, real danger for the characters. Good start.
Yeah, what I liked about this is they're kind of continuing, like you said, this idea that Kraven is now kind of on Team Predator, and what's that going to mean for the Marvel Universe? And it means that Kraven's going to, with the Predators, take down everybody. So fun idea and fun kind of Carrie from everything that's going on, really rewarding the people who are reading, which is awesome. And this is a cool continuation of that idea. And I also love Craven being like, hey, listen, let's go and murder everybody. I've got a plan to do it. I've been planning this for years, but Spider-Man's mine. All right, fucking hands off. I got Spidey. So awesome.
I'm surprised you didn't mention yet that they go after the Fantastic Four first.
Getting there.
Oh, you're getting there. Oh,
yeah. So then we get to the Fantastic Four, which is a weird thing because in this stack we have two times later, we're going to get it again, where Fantastic Four just coffee talk. Man, you know, I don't know what the theme about for coffee and Fantastic Four is, but something was going on in the bullpen because we get that joke a couple times here. So weird. Is that what you meant when I was going to talk about the Fantastic Four?
Yep, that was exactly what I meant, and not the fact that one of your least favorite characters, Reed Richards, gets attacked horribly first and has his arm cut off and is bleeding to death when we leave the end of the issue. So yeah, big stakes here and some big moves. It feels like, you know, it feels very similar. I was going to say it feels like of a piece of Aliens versus Avengers, but... And it does, because the Alien series has always been about big, huge, wild swings and big ideas, not just the scares and the blood. And Predator has always been about, like, who are we going to kill next? Who's going to die in the coolest way possible? So, yeah, both of them have been like, oh, people died in this who shouldn't have died. So, fun stuff.
Yeah, definitely.
Batman Dark Patterns, number 9 from DC Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Hayden Sherman. This is the close of the third arc that is all about seeing patterns where they were not there to begin with. Here, Batman has been downed by an old man who wants to bring the Red Hood gang back. But as we discover over the course of this issue, things are not quite the way they seem. I think we talked about this. This arc maybe felt the weakest of the three, but I think it really ended very strongly in this issue. There were a number of powerfully emotional moments here. Batman was very down, and I thought they really landed the plane in terms of the patterns theme, not to specifically take off the title of the book, but this book has been great. Like, bar none, one of the best Batman books in a very long time, and there are a lot of Batman books.
Yeah, I mean, I really love the art is awesome on this, but this gets real sad at the end here, and a little too dark for me, but I was having a great time right up until the end.
It's right there in the title, though. It's called Dark Patterns. It's not Happy Patterns.
I hear you, but like...
Would you, later on in the stack, we'll talk about Batman Happy Little Trees, so we'll see what
happens. I just feel like, you know, when the... The old guy shot the kid. I was like, man, that could have been, but Jesus, you know, it was just.
It's grim. It's pretty grim.
Yep.
Let's talk about something maybe less grim. Uncle Scrooge, Earth's Mightiest Duck, number 1 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Azrar, Giuseppe Camuncoli, Ciro Cangagliosi, I don't know, and Daniela Orlandini. Apologies about those names, but. This is a follow-up on the best-selling Infinity Dime one-shot that Jason Aaron did last year. And here, we've got a bunch of aliens who are coming after Uncle Scrooge's money. And it seems like there's going to be a big problem potentially throughout the multiverse or throughout time as well, as they're attacking him throughout time. What'd you think about this?
Well, first off, this cover really throws me. And it brings up an interesting thing that a lot of people talk about sometimes. It's like... Does Disney, you know, and Marvel kind of being owned ruin things a little bit? And in this cover, we get, you know, we got old Donald in the carbonite freeze from Star Wars. And it's this weird thing of like in my brain, I can't put these two together. I mean, they're under the same umbrella, so I guess you can play with that. But seeing this, I was just like, man, this is... I don't know, like not everything has to cross over and be everything else. It just, to me, Star Wars and, you know, Scrooge McDuck should be separate, but I don't know, maybe I'm an asshole. You know what I mean?
So is this a rare, not great cover, Pete?
It threw me. Like, it really, I was like, this hurts my brain to look at.
I will agree with you that I don't think it's supposed to be Carbonite and Han Solo, because that doesn't happen anywhere in the book, and that doesn't happen to Donald, and it's not a Star Wars book or anything like that. But it does look like that. I agree with you. In terms of the contents, I found this story a lot busier than the previous one. There's a lot of things going on at all times. And there are some fun bits as Uncle Scrooge travels through time and encounters other versions of himself. But I kind of got to see where this is going, because it hits the ground running and it does not let up until the end of the issue.
Yeah, I mean, getting past the cover a little bit, I did like this, the kind of art, where we had some splash pages kind of like showing all the adventures, you know, and I thought that was really amazing, really kind of cool history, enjoyable, fun last panel. I liked all the action. I liked things that were going. I think Jason Aaron is having a great time with this, and that kind of shows through. And it's fun to see Uncle Scrooge, you know, fighting and kind of being the scrappy dude that he is. So, like, you know, I'm having a blast with all that stuff.
The Power Fantasy, number 11 from Image Comics, written by Kieran Gillen, art by Casper Wingard. In this issue, some big stuff goes down. If you haven't been paying attention to this book, it's about a bunch of people with superpowers. They're supposed to never meet, or it potentially could destroy the world, but they've got to meet because there is a new superpower who has been born to one of them, and they need to figure out what to do with it. But a couple of them, at the same time, are pulling a plan to kill one of the other ones, Etienne, who is sort of the Professor X of this book. I'm trying to think about the best way of describing it, but a lot of this book feels like a chess match constantly. You're watching it as they move the pieces around the board, as they're all strategically playing against each other. This is one where it feels like they're making that big power move where they take the queen, and you're like, oh my God, what's going to happen at this chess game now? It's all over. There's some more twists and turns, but this continues to be one of the tensest, gorgeously drawn books on the stand.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, there's a little bit of kind of moving things around in this issue, so it's not kind of like my favorite. But I love the art. I love the kind of tenseness, the vibe of this comic. I'm very much enjoying this. I can't wait to see what's happening next. So, yeah, I definitely am still enjoying this. Maybe not my favorite issue, but I'm still going to can't wait to see what's happening.
I really like this one a lot. I felt like the action was very clear. It also helped that they had a recap in the front, which has been missing for a couple of issues. Yeah. Kieran Gillen even talks about it on the back, where he's like, well, I don't think I need it, but other people do. So I had to figure out how to put it together. So keep that going. Very helpful for this book, which is often laudably very complicated.
You're Ultimate a sucker for a birthday party, though. So I think that's why you like this issue.
I do like a birthday party. That is very true. I like the cake. I like the candles. I like the presents.
Singing. You're a big fan of the sing.
Yeah. Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion, number 3 from Marvel, written by Dennis Capp and Cody Ziegler, art by Jonas Scharf. In this issue, Miles Morales has tracked down his baby sister to the home of the Ultimate X-Men, so he's crossing over with those characters this issue. That's going to lead into a confrontation next issue before he returns to the 616. I don't love this. And I'll say why I don't love it. I think for similar reasons that I didn't love the second or first issue, is that it should feel like a natural fit to have Miles return to the Ultimate Universe, even though it's a drastically different Ultimate Universe. But this feels purposefully very like Miles Morales, meet this character.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very presentational in that way that's off-putting. It feels like, you know, like the movies you watch when you're waiting in the queue for a theme park ride rather than the actual ride itself. Huh. And that's a bit of a bummer, particularly because I like the creative team. The other thing about it that is throwing me, and I know this was an inevitability, but seeing the Ultimate X-Men characters outside of Peach Momoko's art is very weird.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean, sometimes an artist is so, it just kind of puts their stamp on something. It's hard to kind of see it other places. But I did think it was cool. It was fun to kind of get these you know, Powered Up Kids meeting and kind of figuring things out, even though it was, I agree, Alex, a little muddy. Also weird that Silver Samurai is a babysitter now. But yeah, I mean, we set up a bad guy, so I'm excited to see what's next, even if this wasn't my kind of favorite issue.
Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Tom King, art by Belen Ortega. The three versions of Trinity, the Daughter of Wonder Woman, have been traveling throughout time to bring transformed multiversal corgis back to their present to help save time. It's very silly. It's very fun. But this issue presents the oldest one with a real quandary. Does she save the corgi or does she save her mother from Cerebus? And into the mix comes Steve Trevor. Another great issue of this book, I thought.
Yeah, I agree. I love the art. It sets such a fun tone for this. The fun with the kids and then the kids kind of reacting to the story. I felt like that was such a cool thing. You know, it's nice to kind of have, like, as a reader, have somebody also kind of reacting to it. So yeah, I know you don't like reaction videos, but I felt like this is a fun kind of use of that. Mm-hmm. Also, like, yeah, some interesting twists and turns happening here. And yeah, it's fun to see kind of like Tom King storytelling and such kind of bright kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a fun kind of contrast to his normal stuff. So I'm enjoying it.
Eddie Brock, Carnage, number 7 from Marvel, written by Charles Soule, art by Jesus Saiz. Carnage and Eddie Brock have a tentative detente where every once in a while they got to kill a bad person so that they can stay alive. And in this issue, Eddie and Carnage are searching for somebody new to kill. Meanwhile, Muse is back and searching for them. Pete, what'd you think?
Oh, yeah. Well, Charles Soule is a hell of a writer. I don't know if you've ever noticed that, but he does great work. And I love this cover. I feel like this showdown that they're building to is going to be fun, right? Carnage, Eddie Brock versus the Muse. I feel like that's a really fun setup. And, you know, I feel like Muse in good hands, which Charles Soule is a great character. You know what I mean? You know, he takes a real moment in the car to admire the beauty of his work. So, yeah, this is just great stuff and in great hands. So I'm excited to get this showdown.
I like this, too, and I like the mystery elements of this title in particular. There's a lady from a Green Phoenix organization that keeps popping up in Eddie Brock's mind. And it's intriguing. It feels like very Lostian to me at the same time as all of these other things are going on. The one little qualm I have with this, and maybe this was in other issues and it didn't stand out to me as much, but there's a little bit of like the digital coloring that I don't love. Digital shading, I guess, is what I mean, that always feels a little too smooth to me and a little too shiny. I didn't love it. There were just it was honestly like a page or two specifically focusing on Eddie Brock lying there where it was just a little too shiny. Yeah. But I don't know, just not my favorite technique artistically in comics. That's all. I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer, number 5.
You heard him say comics.
It's true. That's a confession. You got it on tape, cops. Yep. Written by Doug Wagner, art by Daniel Hilliard. This is the final issue of this title. Per the name, she was a fashion school serial killer, but her friend has been kidnapped by human traffickers, and she is going to get horrible vengeance upon them. I thought this series was great, even when it went to Looney Town, even more so in the last two issues. I thought the main character was a lot of fun. The deaths were gross and cartoony at the same time. I don't know. It's super, super bloody per the title, but I really liked it a lot, and there's a great setup for a potential second series at the end here, so I do hope they get to do it because I had a good time.
Well, I'm glad. I'm glad. I do think that the art was so cool. They did such a cool job artistically of undercutting all the violence a little bit by having the art kind of be this really kind of fun choice, which is great. Yeah, I mean, this was a little too kind of like serial killers are great, but I do think there was this interesting kind of moment at the end where the, you know, this lady is rescued by this serial killer, and is like, oh my God, yes, thank you so much. And I'm like, I would love to be able to, you know, as Justin says, like to brain hump a little bit and kind of get inside their head to see.
Does not say that.
If they, he's not here. You don't know that.
Okay.
He says it all the time. You know, like, is she scared of this lady? Does she think she's cool? Like, you know what I mean? So there's this thing where
she's cool. They're friends. It's all good. I have a question for you. Why is it that you like the two serial killers in Eddie Brock Carnage, the previous title we talked about, but you don't like the serial killer in I Was a Fashion School Serial Killer?
Well, and Carnage is a monster. These are kind of like, you know, just having this person be like killing and no repercussions, and like she's like, yeah, I'm a serial killer. I don't know, man. I don't know where the line is, but it's weird.
But we'll find out together.
Yeah. Yeah, I just, I don't know. Maybe it also goes back to the fact that I hated Dexter. You know, maybe there's a little bit of that in there. I don't know. But I do think that, like, it would have been cool if we were got to be the person who was saved a little bit. And she was like, thanks for saving me. You know what I mean? Is scared because she was like, oh, my God, you're a serial killer. Great news. Now we can continue to be best friends. And I don't know. I wanted a little bit more out of that. You know what I mean?
All right. Fair enough. Okay. Fantastic Four, number two for Marvel, written by Ryan North, art by Umberto Ramos. The Fantastic Four has been split up throughout time by Dr. Doom and have to figure out a way to get back to each other, which they do over the course of this issue. I continue to really like this run, and I like this new storyline, which they are going to be continuing next issue as well. Like I talked about with the first issue, they did such a good job with mostly done-in-one stories in the previous run of Fantastic Four. I was a little nervous how this would work out, but Ryan North's still focusing issue by issue. There's some great family dynamics here, some lovely Fantastic Four stuff, some great gamesmanship going on between the Fantastic Four and Doctor Doom. This is very fun.
Yeah, this is great. Also, really cool cover. Umberto Ramos is doing the art on that. I knew I loved this art. That's really cool. I didn't realize that till right now.
Really good job on this, too. We've had a little discussion on our Discord about Umberto Ramos, who is not always everybody's favorite, but I think he's like upped his game in a really clear way. Like, he can be very exaggerated. Some of his work on, I think, Spider-Man was a little too exaggerated at times, but maybe this feels a little more restrained, and it's really working for the title.
I also like the story, and I think it's just kind of like this cool Fantastic Four versus Doom scenario where Doom is just like talking to him like, hey, listen, I can control time. You come up with a cool plan, I go back in time and fucking foil it. How you gonna beat me? I thought that was fun. I had a blast with that.
Action Comics 1089 from DC Comics, written by Mark Waid, art by Skylar Patridge. This takes place during Superboy times in Smallville, and Superboy has been confronted by another superhero named Captain Comet, who wants to help train him a little bit, and that's what we get in this issue. I think this is a pretty fun run. This is definitely in Mark Waid's sweet spot, and I like Skylar Patridge's art here. It feels very classic. What do you think, Pete?
Yeah, I really love the art. I think this is interesting enough story here where we're kind of getting a different origin story than what we're used to, and we get kind of a Martian Manhunter idea kind of here, but the twist at the end, I was kind of like, whoa, usually a fan of Martian Manhunter, but maybe not in this.
Martian Manhunter?
Well, the Captain Cobalt or whatever the fuck his name is.
Captain Comet?
Yeah. And to me, he's, you know, I feel like he's Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, but he's not Martian Manhunter.
Right, but it's a similar thing where Martian Manhunter was pretending to be somebody and then was like, I'm just trying to see who's cool before I reveal myself.
Yes, the two characters in comics who have pretended to be other people. Martian Manhunter and Captain Comet. I get it.
I felt like it had a Martian Manhunter vibe to it, okay? I apologize.
Thank you. Thank you for apologizing. I appreciate you apologizing. Thank you. Great. What a good moment on our show. The Ultimates number 15 from Marvel, written by Dennis Kapp, art by Von Randall. In this issue, we are meeting Ultimate Shang-Chi and the Ultimates are going back to fight one of the acolytes of the Hulk. Pete, you like Shang-Chi. What'd you think about this?
Yeah, I mean, first off, I'm, you know, since JT Sizzler isn't here, I'm going to be the camp counselor and say Dennis Camp is in session and might be the end of the summer, but camp's just getting started here. And this is just badass from the beginning. I mean, we get a little Shang-Chi in the beginning fucking shit up, and then later you get She-Hulk ripping heads off. Hell yeah. Now this is some good times. I love the art. I love the action. That's a badass cover right there. So hells to the motherfucking yes.
This was my least favorite issue of the Ultimates so far. I found the art was actually hard to follow and a little cramped in terms of the panel layouts. There was a lot of talking and a lot of stuff going on, but not the big idea forward movement that I usually expect from this title. So sorry to disagree with you, Pete, but I was disappointed.
Apology accepted.
Thank you. Bug Wars number 6 from Image Comics, written by Jason Aaron, art by Mahmoud Azrar. This is the finale of the first book as Slade Slaymaker, in his backyard, shrunken down to tidy little bug size, is trying to stop an army of different types of bugs from killing his full-sized brother. Pete, I know this was one of your favorites of the week, so take it away.
It was. First off, look at this cover, bro. This is what having a yard is about. You know what I mean? You got to go do battle. You got to fucking battle the elements. Some days you're going to win and some days you're going to lose. So I love this idea of Bug Wars. I feel like Jason Aaron is making taking a fun idea and kind of turning it on its head. I just feel like the art's awesome. The action is fantastic. This is a very cool, over-the-top story that kind of takes place in maybe everybody's backyard. But, this is a ton of fun and more, please. I love this team.
I really like this as well. I thought this was a nice wrap-up to the first arc. The previous issue was a little confusing what happened at the end, but they jumped back in time to explain it better in this issue. So it was weird. It was a weird order to roll out information, but aside from that, it really worked for me. I thought there was real stakes in terms of the relationship between the brothers, which I thought was interesting. Good wrap up at the end there and good tee up for book 2 as well. And last but not least, Batman and Robin, number 24 from DC Comics, written by Philip Kennedy Johnson, art by Miguel Mendoza, Carmine D. Giandomenico, and Junie Ba. This is wrapping up the arc of Batman versus Memento, a villain he may have fought back in the day who has some horrible supernatural powers. Then it's all wrapping up and recentering the relationship between Batman and Robin. Pete, what'd you think?
Yeah, first off, intense cover. Great, though. Loved it. I love this. I love the action. This is a fun issue. I also love to see Batman working as a team member. Working with others always makes me very happy. And then kind of like, you know, as far as creepy bad guys go, that was a great, you know, this kind of like Memento monster thing was awesome. More of this, please. This is fun.
This is really good. I in particular really like the final pages drawn, I believe, by Junie Ba that show a kid version, sort of like a crayon version of Batman and Robin and going on adventures. I thought that was really cute and fun, and I love more of that as well. Great backup there. And great run on the book so far. And folks, super short stack, as I said, but that is it for the week. If you would like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to talk to you about comics, Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show, comicbookclublive.com, for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.